What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I believe we should move to make college affordable for everybody. There are some voices saying, well, that doesn't count unless you go even further, unless it's free even for the kids of millionaires. But I only want to make promises that we can keep. Look, what I'm proposing is plenty bold. I mean, these are big ideas. We can gather the majority to drive those big ideas through without turning off half the country before we even get into office. And that, I think, is the best governing strategy, as well as what it's going to take in order to win. And Lord knows we got to win.
I'm Pete Buttigieg, and I approve this message.
You running for president, and you want black people to vote for you? That's a downfall. That's not going to happen.
I'm not asking for your vote.
You ain't going to get it either.
Hello and welcome to the Katie Helper Show. You can hear the Katie Helper Show on SoundCloud, on iTunes, and please rate and review us there. Since doing this interview, as you know, Kamala Harris has dropped out, so we don't talk about her in the past candidate tense as we would have had we recorded it after her dropping out. But yeah, this is still a really important interview about a really not that covered story about Mayor Pete. And of course, please become Patreon supporters at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. That's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Ryan, thanks for coming. I wanted to talk to you about some article you'd written. And this always happens. I want to talk to you. I get in touch with you. We schedule an interview. And then by the time we talk, you've written a bunch more. So that's good, which is good. But you write a lot about the kind of you've written about the battle for the Democratic Party's soul. You've also written about the Bernie Warren thing, which you don't see as that. And there's an interesting debate around that, about like around how different they are. And that's a very contentious topic, as you know, from people attacking you on Twitter and perhaps IRL. I haven't witnessed it. and then you have this great book. We've got people. And what's really interesting is the stuff that you've done on Mayor Pete, which has been surprisingly undercovered, did not cause the kind of reaction I think it should have caused, and I thought it would have caused, about his black support or lack thereof. Could you talk about how you even, it seems like it would be an interesting story, how that even came about, especially the first piece that you wrote about his Douglas plan?
Yeah, so the Douglas plan, that's his like piece of sweeping policy outreach to the black community. He named it after Frederick Douglass. And so when he rolled out in South Carolina, he did so in an op-ed that was written by three prominent black leaders in the state. And then it was signed, it said, by 400 plus South Carolinians. And so the first kind of clue that something might be amiss there is that when I went back and looked at it later, there were no longer three bylines on it. There were now just two. Okay, what's going on here? And so Johnny Cordero had been listed as a co-byline of this op-ed about how great the Douglas plan is. And that was quite a coup for the Buttigieg campaign to get him, because he is quite a big deal in South Carolina. He is the chairman of the Black Caucus for the Democratic Party in South Carolina. And so then we also that he was no longer on it was interesting. One of the other co-authors was Ivory Thigpen, who's a state representative,
and
a well-known pastor. Yeah, excellent name. Also gifted with an excellent name. He is the co-chair of the Bernie Sanders campaign in South Carolina. All right, that's a little odd.
Yeah.
And so then we took the 400 plus names and we ran them through the South Carolina voter file, which, because it's South Carolina, they collect racial information.
Thank God for small favors.
right. So you, and you know, self-identification, but you're, you know, so the voter, when they register to vote, checks whether they're white, black, or something else. And so you don't have to do the problematic thing of searching for people on Facebook and checking how white their posts are, to, you know, to figure out if they're white or not.
Right.
You can just say, like, okay, in the voter file, this person is listed as black. This person is listed as white.
Do and people ever do NA or like decline to? Just curious.
I didn't find any. But I would suspect that that's people enough, other or don't want to answer.
Yeah.
But typically people are like, people like 99% of people answer that question.
Yeah. Or Rachel Dolezal.
Right. but it's unlikely that many people, Rachel Dolezal, from white to black, because you'd only be hurting yourself in South Carolina.
Right.
Drawing heat to yourself.
Right.
We ran that through, and we found of the people that we could find in there, about half, or actually of the people we could find, about 60% were white. Which meant that, you know, if every single person we couldn't find was black, then at least half or so looked like it was white. It was a very strong implication that this was a list of 400 black South Carolinians. After all, it's a plan for black America.
Right.
And so I went to the Buttigieg campaign. They said, no. We always wanted a multiracial coalition supporting this.
Right.
And, you know, it was never our intention to suggest that this was all black South Carolinians. So I ended up actually kind of making that the second half of my story rather than the top of it. And then I was eventually able to get in touch with the three people who had signed it: Tamika Devine, who is a councilwoman in Columbia, Ivory Thigpen, the state representative, and then Johnny Cordero. Tamika Devine was upset about how the thing had been rolled out. She said that they were intentionally vague about how they used her name and made it look like she was endorsing Buttigieg, when all she had said was that she was fine to endorse the plan. She thought it was a good plan.
Right.
The other two said, they told them that not only do we not endorse Buttigieg, we do not endorse this plan either.
Wow.
Like, we're not even supportive of the plan.
Your plan sucks.
And they went ahead and used their names anyway. And so then after we published the story, the Buttigieg campaign sent us an email. They said, look, we had given everybody the opportunity to opt out, and which is hilarious in its own right. But in the email that they sent to the 400 plus people, including Cordero and Thigpen and Devine, it said, you'll be joining a list of 400 black South Carolinians. They made it explicit. They made the subtext there.
Right.
And then they said, well, that was a mistake on the part of the staffer. It was never intended to be. And I was like, no, really, it wasn't intended to be stated. It was intended to be implied.
Right.
So
yeah.
The staffer drew the implication and made it explicit, and that's where they went wrong. So the whole thing was a mess. And then after the story was up, I tweeted out that on top of all of this, they also used a stock photo of a Kenyan woman to advertise the plan.
Oh my God!
And then, bizarrely, if you understand the media, the stock photo became the story. Like, the New York Times and Washington Post both wrote stories about the stock photo, made that their headline. And when Kamala Harris was asked about it in the debate, she was asked about the stock photo. And I think it's because the stock photo is an easier thing to cop to. The Buttigieg campaign apologized for it.
Yeah.
contract or staff error.
Right, totally.
You know, we're sorry. We'll do better.
Right.
Much easier to just apologize for that, cop to it, move on, than it is to explain how you had a list of 200 people that you implied and sometimes said were black that were actually white, and that you listed people who were supporters, not just listed them, but put their names on an op-ed.
Right. That's insane. Right.
When they said they were not supportive, that's much more difficult to answer. And so the stock photo kind of allowed them to wiggle out of it. And the stock photo also kind of allowed the media to wiggle out of covering the story and instead to cover the stock photo. Funny angle of it.
Right. Because that seems like a kind of unoffensive or like offensive, problematic. But look, it's understandable. What are you going to do? They want to find a photo of someone who was black.
And they didn't have any of Pete with
right,
black
exactly,
people.
Right,
exactly,
yeah, without, like, doing the bunny ears behind him or something, or, like, you know. But okay, yeah, because I saw that asked Kamala Harris about it.
This week, you criticized Mayor Pete Buttigieg's outreach to African-American voters. You said, quote, the Democratic nominee has got to be someone who has the experience of connecting with all of who we are as the diversity of the American people, end quote. What exactly prompted you to say that, Senator Harris?
Well, that was asked a question that related to a stock photograph that his campaign published. But listen, I think that it really speaks to a larger issue, and I'll speak to the larger issue. I believe that the mayor has made apologies for that.
And I was actually really surprised by her response because she really dismissed it, wasn't critical at all of him.
Senator Harris, thank you. Mayor Buttigieg, your response to that?
My response is I completely agree.
And I was really hoping someone would...
What she did is she pivoted to this thing of, like, you have to have, I'll speak in generalities, and you
right.
have to have an authentic connection with the black community.
Right.
The larger issue is that for too long, I think, candidates have taken for granted constituencies that have been the backbone of the Democratic Party and have overlooked those constituencies. And have, you know, they show up when it's, you know, close to election time and show up in a black church. And want to get the vote, but just haven't been there before. I mean, you know, there are plenty of people who applauded black women for the success of the 2018 election, applauded black women for the election of a senator from Alabama. But, you know, at some point, folks get tired of just saying, oh, you know, thank me for showing up, and say, well, show up for me. Because when black women... are 3 to 4 times more likely to die in connection with childbirth in America, when the sons of black women will die because of gun violence more than any other cause of death, when black women make 61 cents on the dollar as compared to all women who tragically make 80 cents on the dollar, the question has to be, where you been and what are you gonna do? And do you understand who the people are?
And clearly she was trying to say that Buttigieg does not have an authentic connection with the black community, but she decided not to actually say that, but just imply it.
Yeah.
Nobody. I feel like people think that he's kind of a zombie candidate, that because of this handicap that he has, that 0% black support,
right.
1% Hispanic support, that he can't win the nomination, and therefore why anger all of
right.
his nice elderly supporters.
Right. Why bother?
By hitting it, by like being the ones that go after their golden boy.
Right.
But they might be wrong in that calculation. Like,
yeah.
What if he runs away with it in Iowa and New Hampshire? And then all the money pours his way. And so we'll see. But
yeah.
That was my guess. Sometimes you have to wait a month. As a front runner to start getting really hit. Like Warren was, you know, basically a front runner in September and people mostly left her alone. And
right.
then it was the October debate where all hell came down on her.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I assume that they made some agreement, Kamala and Pete's campaigns, or maybe it's the, it's a pact, a son of a, child of a Marxist pact that they share. That
solidarity.
Yeah, solidarity. Yeah. Shuja Hader has a great piece for The Outline called Centrist Child Syndrome. Yeah. But yeah, that was really surprising. Okay, so it goes from like the most charitable explanation for what the campaign did is that they let's be the most charitable possible for what happened with the rollout of this op-ed and this plan.
I mean, the most charitable, and this is what I've heard, is that they passed around a sign-up sheet at Pete events in South Carolina, and that just used everyone on that list. Do you support the Douglas plan? Sign here.
Yeah.
And if you signed it, you got on. And I don't think that there's a charitable explanation for the byline.
Right.
Because both Thigpen and Cordero were quite clear. The most charitable is that they couldn't understand when they said no.
That no means no.
No meant no. And, the Liz Smith is a terrific communicator, as a professional, PR political person, an amazing operator. She's like a character out of a mix of House of Cards and Veep. Extremely talented, hard charging, and you can just see her. I didn't have any evidence of this, but you can just imagine she's got two phones. You got a phone in each hand. These folks say they don't want to do it. And she's just like, look, send them an email, say we're going with it. And if they don't want to do it, then tell them that they don't have to do it. Just do it. Just go. You can see that happening. And then they didn't opt out. All right. They must be cool.
Right. You know what I realized that must have been the who they named this after? Not Frederick Douglass, but Stephen A. Douglas of the Lincoln Douglas debates.
The popular sovereignty candidate.
Yeah, exactly.
Who owned a plantation in Mississippi.
And defended slavery. Yeah, that's now it all makes sense.
Although I think they do spell it with two S's rather than one. So.
Oh yeah, you're right. Leave off that the last F for sneaky.
Stephen A. Douglas.
Yeah, for Stephen. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Then that's kind of an interesting story because you get to interact with the story. You get to actually get a comment on it from the campaign. Is it awkward doing something like that to write about something that you've? I mean, it's what journalism is a lot, but it's not that common because people have so many relationships with people. So you don't want to, it's awkward. You don't want to blow up someone's spot.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of used to it at this point.
Yeah.
And it's funny, a lot of the people who were in communications at a lot of these campaigns where I'm writing critical stuff. I've been writing critical stuff of places where they've worked for years.
Mm-hmm.
The Biden campaigns, one of their top communications people used to work for the USTR, and his job was to push the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
What's USTR? United States?
U.S. Trade Representative.
Right.
So
okay.
They were the one under Obama who was advocating for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which I was writing about regularly as a sellout to the working people of the country, et cetera. And before that, I can't remember what he was doing before that, but it's very common that I've known these people from other jobs. And so we all know, how things are going to unfold. I'm going to be as fair as I can. I'm going to get your comments in, get your perspective in. I'm going to hear you out to an exhaustive degree. But at the same time, you know what I'm going to write, you know where I'm coming from. I'm telling you what I've got. And so I am glad that I still, 10 years into this, I'm still have working relationships with people that whose bosses I'm frying on a regular basis.
Right. Yeah. Great. Mazel tov. And then you wrote, there wasn't that big of a response to that. Did you think maybe it would come into play during the debates?
Well, I mean, it did come up at one point.
Yeah, it did.
So I thought it would. But then at that point, it's up to the candidates.
Right.
Whether or not they want to go down that path.
Right.
And so the moderators got a lot of heat for not asking it, or not a lot of heat, but like, you know, they got some heat.
Yeah.
And it's true that they didn't ask the question of like, they didn't press Pete on it.
Right.
And they didn't ask him about the endorsements, but they did raise the issue. And so they opened the door for that conversation to happen, and the candidates just kind of didn't allow it to happen. Didn't want it to happen.
Yeah. And it was basically Harris.
Right.
Right.
And then nobody else picked it up after that.
Yeah. I thought
Cory Booker was going to, but then instead he went, and had that great line lighting up Biden for being high.
Right.
When he was saying that we shouldn't legalize marijuana.
Right. Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for the vice president. He has sworn me into my office as a hero. This week, I hear him literally say that I don't think we should legalize marijuana. I thought you might have been high when you said it. And let me tell you, because marijuana in our country is already legal for privileged people. And it's one, the war on drugs has been a war on black and brown people.
And then the Bernie joke where he talked about that.
Right.
And then you wrote this about Mayor Pete Buttigieg, I can never say his name, which is, I think, an unfair advantage he has, is that everyone calls him Mayor Pete because it's easier to say.
Right.
So then it feels like he's, you know, more beloved than he is. Mm-hmm. And you wrote this story. It had a bit of an impact, not as much as I thought it would. I think part of it's like a slightly complicated story. It's not like they made them up out of thin air. It's kind of hard to explain. It's like they implied and they said that these 400 voters were black, but half of them weren't. But the three people on the op-ed, only one of whom kind of agreed. That seems kind of like really hard to explain away.
Yeah.
My Bernie bro identity has me, of course, imagining if anything, not that anything like this would have happened with Sanders, but if anything remotely comparable happened, I mean, it would just been like, resign, racist old man, go back to Vermont.
Right.
So then you wrote another piece on Mayor Pete's record when it comes to racial justice and criminal justice, which was, how did that go? How did that, what prompted you to write that?
Well, so the Douglas plan has a number of tenets, and Pete himself has a few things that he returns to regularly when he talks about racial justice. And, you know, one of them was the key tenet of the Douglas plan is that he's going to give 25% of federal contracts to minority and women-owned businesses. And the other thing that he's been very upfront on is marijuana policy reform, calling for legalization, expungement. And in fact, he's called for decriminalization for possession across the board. So any drug would have no prison sentence along with it. And that's further than Bernie Sanders has gone.
Yeah.
And I'm almost certain it's further than Elizabeth Warren has gone, which is interesting to see that Buttigieg is outflanking Sanders on a policy issue.
Right.
Come on, Bernie.
Yeah.
And he's been pressed on it by kind of the marijuana and the drug policy folks, and he has not been willing to go there.
Yeah.
So the only office that Buttigieg has held is mayor, so it's fair. Okay, this is what he says about criminal justice. This is what he says about contracting with black and minority and women contractors. What's his record as mayor? Because as mayor, he runs the police force.
Right.
As mayor, he has a significant sway over contracting. Kayla Lacey wrote the piece for us at The Intercept about contracting and found that less than 3% of contracts went to minority and black-owned firms and women-owned firms. And when it comes to marijuana, the arrest disparity was way worse in South Bend under Buttigieg than it was even nationally or in the state of Indiana.
Right. And that is something where you really do have a lot of, like, direct control over it. It's not like you're a senator or a congressperson. You know, you're the, like, what, executive of a city. And
you could, I mean, as mayor, you know, there's the old saying that people improve what they measure. As mayor, if you went to the police chief who you hired after he fired the black police chief,
you could say,
look, the disparity in arrest rates for marijuana possession in the United States is a sign of systemic racism, which is what he says on the trail. He says, I want to work on that here in South Bend. I want every week for you to report to me the disparity in arrest rates when it comes to white and black pot arrests. And if it's greater than the national average, if it's greater than zero, frankly, then the mayor could say, I'm unhappy. This is unfair. Now, if I were going to make Buttigieg's case for him, I'd say that the systemic problem he faces is that Notre Dame, which has like 12,000 students, probably does everything it can to keep the police off its campus.
Right.
So its cops don't even have an opportunity. However, I'm sure they're not patrolling like the outskirts of the campus, you know, sniffing for weed.
Right.
Because if they did, they could probably collar people.
Right. And tell us about the story of the police chief who was fired.
Right. This was a convoluted story in a lot of ways. But so when he was running, there was a cabal of racist white there was a cabal of police officers who appeared to be acting in a racist manner. They're very litigious.
I'll take it out. Right, as we know from your story.
Who were conspiring to have Daryl Boykins, the police chief, fired. And they were, according to reporting from Jonathan Larson at the Young Turks, who has obtained transcripts kind of some of these police tapes that caught them talking about this. They were trying to use donors, Pete's donors, to get to him, to have the donors persuade him to fire Boykins. Now, Buttigieg says he fired him because he learned that there was a federal investigation into the tape recording that was going on. Boykins says that he was never the target of that investigation, that there's no federal crime, there's no wiretapping laws when it's your own police lines. It's not like he tapped them at home or on their cell phones, like a police force, just like Coca-Cola.
Right.
Like you can tap the lines that are part of it. And there was a public safety reason for it. If somebody's calling in.
Right. Sure.
They're reporting something. You want to have that recorded.
Yeah.
They were accidentally recording some lines that they didn't intend to, whatever. So it's a long, complicated story. But it was reported that there were racist things being said on these lines. He ended up demoting him instead to a different position, and he has since left, replaced with a white police officer. And Buttigieg has said that that's an incident that is that deeply damaged his relationship with the black community.
So he fired him, and then
there were a lot of protests. I believe it was Trayvon Martin had just been killed, and there were protests in the wake of that.
Yeah.
And those protests merged with a protest against his firing of Boykins.
Yeah.
And so he rescinded that and said, well, okay, I'm going to have him stay on the force, but just not as chief.
But demote him, yeah. Which is like a whole other thing, because he was documenting, like you were saying, part of the wiretap was documenting the racist or the, can I say this? The racist comments about him. So that should have also been something that Mayor Pete had looked into more.
Yeah, according to Karen DePape, who is the the communications director at the time for the South Bend police who listened to the tapes. That's what she said was on them.
Got it. Yeah. And then there's this part of it, where you cite, this I thought was really interesting. Someone named, Henry Davis Jr. who was who was recently elected to a third term to the city council, told The Intercept he was unsurprised to hear the significant disparity in arrests. "It's bad as hell here," said Davis. "The number for African-American police officers have dropped to historic lows. He feels like it's an open book test. If I do those things, then I win." He's discounting the fact that he's dealing with human beings. That was Davis talking about Mayor Pete. He lost a primary to him in 2015. You're right, and has often butted heads with the city over policing. In October 2012, after leaving a council meeting in which he voted against a police union contract, Davis was pulled over and detained at gunpoint. Davis, according to the dash cam video, protested that officers knew who he was. "I know exactly who you are," one told him, explaining he had been pulled over for a sudden lane change, though there's no evidence of such a lane change in the video. In the wake of the Boykins fiasco, Davis had reported the South Bend Police Department to the Department of Justice for an investigation into the racist remarks caught on police recordings, and the officers sued him for defamation, which was tossed out of court. This was something that happened while Mayor Pete was mayor.
Right. He primaried Mayor Pete.
After he had, got in 2015.
After all this happened, and Pete beat him.
Right. Okay. Did anything happen? Was that treated as the scandal it should have been?
Not quite. I think things like this happen in small cities all across the country. We don't hear a lot about them, and they don't become scandals. And typically their mayors don't try to become president.
Right. That was the most shocking thing to me.
It's crazy.
Of all of them.
It's America. It's America.
But that's not even just your run of the mill, I don't know. That feels like something seems like something you can strongly condemn, and you can create. It's like, I don't know how hard it is to create an environment where that stuff doesn't happen, but it doesn't seem quite as hard as dismantling systemic racism.
Right.
And white supremacy.
Right. Right. Those officers were not disciplined.
Yeah. I mean, that in itself is like a total stain on him.
Mayor Pete's got work to do.
And Sanders and Warren are closer than others say.
Well, Sanders is great, and that doesn't mean that Warren is a bank shill. Both things can be true.
Well, that's a lie. I had Liza Featherstone on who said for us, Warren isn't Sanders. She's also not Clinton, which I think
I don't understand why that's such a controversial thing to
say.
Agree,
but
it clearly is.
Yeah. I have to say, this is not a dig on Warren, but I really thought the photo you used of her and the story you have of her I thought it was Boris Johnson just because the hair color or the angle was very, I was like, what's that? Yeah, it really does look like it. In your piece, in three touchstone speeches, Elizabeth Warren grounds her campaign in the history of American protest and movement building. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. And
we'll
have you on again. Hope you quell whatever fight's happening in the background over
Thanksgiving.
Turkey. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Bye. Ryan. Bye. Thanks so much for listening to The Katie Helper Show. The Katie Helper Show is edited by Ted Reedy. Our theme song is by the band Cordova.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Cachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to cachava.com and use code NEWS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.